See, memory, remember, creates the future as well as the past. You wouldn't know you were going to have anything happen tomorrow unless something had happened yesterday. You figure because the sun rose yesterday and yesterday and yesterday that it will arise again tomorrow. If you didn't remember it, you wouldn't know there was going to be any tomorrow. Of course, there isn't. Tomorrow is an illusion. So is yesterday. Simply isn't here. Where is it? Bring me tomorrow's newspaper. Now this is perfectly marvelous arrangement, you see. So that you may feel as you think these things over that you are almost on the verge of going mad. I sometimes feel that when I get involved in the sort of contemplative state. It is so weird and so far out that I think I'm going to lose my mind. But don't worry. You see, just like being dead. Just let go. And swing with it. Because it'll always bounce. And what makes you, gives you the sense of going mad is that you think you're not in control and that it's all lost and someone else is going to take over or something else is going to take over. Well, of course it has to, because like you say, when you've driven long enough in the car, you say to your wife, will you drive for a while, please? You want relief. So something else has to take over. But it's all you. So do you see that how the nature of being is constructed in this extraordinarily fascinating way? So that it constantly renews itself and therefore is worth going on by eternal forgetting and getting rid of itself.
And that was a very interesting clip by Alan Watts. Included in the CD, the Quantum Reality Makeover CD, are more elements than I've been able to play for you today. But it includes Alan Watts and some segments about from the Mayan and Aztec culture. It includes some discussion and recordings on parallel universe and the nature of quantum reality. There is some spiritual inspiration with the power of I Am, and there'll be a little bit more in terms of, you know, connecting oneself into their own flow of power through that understanding and through that affirmation and surrendering to that power that really fuels us. When we have that resistance, it's when things break down. But we can allow ourselves to gain that access of the nature of power that creates the universe, that creates reality. And we can become co-creators in that process as we transform our lives, as we transform our health, as we transform our bodies, and as we transform our culture and politics and world that we live in. There's a power there. The number to call is 212-209-2950 to show your support for WBAI. I want you to stay tuned for the remainder of this morning's broadcast. Coming up will be Hour of the Wolf. You're listening to, what are we listening to? We're listening to Nakwal is the name of this piece. And also we heard during this program, Easy Like the Snow Falls Down, Don't Go Back to Sleep, Spirit of Rumi, Tamcha Tibet, Freedom Dance, and Of course, the opening theme by Stevie Wonder, The Bell of Freedom, The Bell for Freedom, Buffy St. Marie, Easy Like the Snow Falls Down, and Man Among Men, Kurt Bester and Sam Carr. So stay tuned. I have been Catherine on behalf of Robert Knight and Earthwatch. And remember that you can keep your calls coming in and show your support by calling 212-209-2950. If you can make a pledge of $35, you'll receive the Quantum Reality Makeover CD. Coming up next, Hour of the Wolf. Stay tuned.
It was a cold and stormy night when Jim Freund snowed in the bowels of Brooklyn. That's right. I'm Max Mead, sitting in for Jim Freund on this edition of Hour of the Wolf. And tonight we bring you a free premium during our winter fun drive. Something that was offered on cassette previously, hasn't been offered in many years. Half of it consists of a 1937 radio play of Rossum's Universal Robots from 1937. Yeah, creaky old science fiction. We'll get to that in the second half of the show. We're going to begin, however, with something I produced for the Brooklyn Museum, an exhibit called The Machine Age in America, 1918 to 1941. It consists of clips of old-time radio sound bites, strung together with narration by Kathy O'Connell. Yes, Rosebud returns to WBAI this morning as well. And since both things together take up nearly a full 90 minutes, let's get started. The Machine Age in America. Here on Hour of the Wolf without Jim Freund.
Radio's own show, Behind the Mic. Radio, with a switch of your dial, radio brings you tragedy, comedy, entertainment, information, education, a whole world at your command. But there are stories behind radio, stories behind your favorite programs and favorite personalities and radio people you never hear of. Stories as amusing, dramatic, and as interesting as any make-believe stories you hear on the air. And that's what we give you. The human interest, the glamour, the tragedy, the comedy, and information that are behind the mic.
Radio station KDKA Pittsburgh transmits the first commercial radio broadcast in 1920. To determine the range of its signal, the station asks listeners to send postcards if they have received the station's election night newscast.
It is now apparent that the Republican ticket of Harding and Coolidge is running well ahead of Cox and Roosevelt. At the present time, Harding has collected more than 16 million votes against some 9 million for the Democrats. We'll give you the state vote in just a moment. But first, we'd like to ask you to let us know if this broadcast is reaching you. Please drop us a card, address station KDKA, Westinghouse, East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, this is Graham McNamee speaking from the Navy Yard, Washington, D.C. Just a moment ago, the last turn of the propellers of the Memphis brought her close into the dock. The entire white-uniformed crew of the Memphis is now lined up at attention, awaiting Lindbergh. Lindbergh is coming down the gangplank. There's the boy.
When I landed at Le Bourget a few weeks ago, I landed with the expectancy and the hope of being able to see Europe. It was the first time I'd ever been abroad. Uh, I'd only been gone from America for 2 days, a little less. And I wasn't in any hurry to get back. But by the time I'd been in France a week, in Belgium a day, and in England 2 or 3 days, by that time I had opened several cables from America. And I had talked to 3 ambassadors and their attachés. And I found that it didn't make much difference whether I wanted to stay over there or not. And I was informed that while it wasn't an order to come back home, that there'd be a battleship waiting for me next week. However, in the short time I spent in the 3 countries of Europe that I visited, there were several things in connection with aviation in particular that brought to my attention in comparison to the aeronautical activities we have here in the States. All Europe looks at our air mail line with reverence. There's nothing like them anywhere abroad. But where we have mail lines, they have passenger lines. What we need now in America, I believe, probably more than any other one thing to develop our aviation, is a series of airports at every town and city in the country.
Now, fellow countrymen, it was in America that the art of flying of heavier-than-air machines was first developed. As the experiments became successful, the airplane was devoted to practical purposes. It has been adapted to commerce in the transportation of passengers and mail and used for national defense by our land and sea forces. Beginning with a limited flying radius, its length has been gradually extended. We have made many flying records. Our army flyers have circumnavigated the globe. One of our Navy men started from California and flew far enough to have reached Hawaii, but being off his course, landed in the water. Another officer of the Navy has flown to the North Pole. Our own country has been traversed from shore to shore in a single flight. It had been apparent for some time that the next great feat of the air would be a continuous flight from the mainland of America to the mainland of Europe. 2 courageous Frenchmen made the reverse attempt and passed to a fate that is as yet unknown. Others were speeding their preparations to make the trial, but it remained for an unknown youth to tempt the element and win. On a morning just 3 weeks ago yesterday, this wholesome, earnest, fearless, courageous product of America rose into the air from Long Island on a monoplane christened the Spirit of St. Louis in honor of his home and his supporters. He was alone, His destination was Paris. 33 hours and 30 minutes later, in the evening of the second day, he landed at his destination on the French flying field of Le Bourget. He had traveled 3,600 miles and established a new and remarkable record. The execution of his project was a perfect exhibition of art. And as President of the United States, I bestow the Distinguished Flying Cross as a symbol of appreciation for what he is and what he has done upon Colonel Charles A. Lindbergh.
And ladies and gentlemen, we have just listened to the delightful address of Mr. Coolidge, the President of the United States, regarding Colonel Charles Lindbergh and the presentation of the Distinguished Flying Cross to that young man. And now the National Broadcasting Company and associated radio stations who are putting on this program by radio are going to ask you to just listen to the band for a few moments, because particularly this is the first time band music or music has been transmitted from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific coast, which is another epoch. We will listen to the band.
Presenting for the first time in radio the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon and Dale Arden. Racing high above the Earth, comfortably seated in a giant airliner, Flash Gordon, internationally famous athlete, looks admiringly across the aisle at Dale Arden, the lovely young companion of his air voyage. The minds of both are intent on the terrible destruction which for many months has been approaching the Earth with terrific speed. The new planet hurtling through space directly in the path of the Earth. Suddenly, there is a violent jar. The plane lurches into a spinning nosedive. Flash Gordon's trained muscles carry him across the aisle to the frightened girl. He gathers her in his arms and leaps free of the falling plane. And pulling the ripcord of his parachute, glides to Earth.
Don't be frightened, Dale. The plane has crashed, but we're safe.
Yes, thanks to you.
Hold fast. We're landing now. Careful. Easy. There.
Oh,
there. Are you all right, Dale?
Yes.
Good, good.
Oh, look, Flash. There's a round steel tower. Where can we be?
Why, that's the laboratory of the great scientist, Dr. Hans Zarka. Why, he's coming this way. I'll call to him to help us. I hope you'll pardon us for breaking in on you so unceremoniously, Doctor, but you see, we had to bail out.
I know you for what you are, spies, come to steal my secret. But I have the answer to that. Come with me.
Put that gun away, Professor Zarka. The man is mad, Dale. We'll have to humor him. All right, Professor, all right. We'll come with you.
Step down this ladder into this tower. Down, I say.
All right, all right.
There now, we are in my rocket ship, and in 10 seconds we will be on our way to the new planet. We will all die. Die for science.
Oh, Flash, the doctor is mad. His rocket ship is rushing away from the Earth with the speed of light. Right into the path of the new planet.
Hold tight, Dale. We'll escape somewhere.
To the new planet. The new planet. We three will save the Earth.
Dr. Zarka, there's still time to swing your rocket ship out of the path of the new planet.
No, no, no.
what will you gain for science if we're all killed in the crash?
I know who you are, Flash Gordon. The world's greatest athlete. But your trained strength will not save you. Only my mind, the mind of Zarkon, his scientist, can save you. Can save any human soul upon the Earth.
Be careful, Flash. He's reaching for the controls.
Stand aside, Dr. Zarkon.
Feel it. The gravitation pull of the new planet. We crash in 5 seconds.
Oh,
On March 12, 1933, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt presents the first of his famous fireside chats, in which he speaks informally to the American public. The president explains recent economic developments and the purpose of the historic banking holiday. It is the height of the Depression.
My friends, I want to talk for a few minutes with the people of the United States about banking. To talk with the comparatively few who understand the mechanics of banking, but more particularly with the overwhelming majority of you who use banks for the making of deposits and the drawing of checks. I want to tell you what has been done in the last few days and why it was done and what the next steps are going to be. What then happened during the last few days of February and the first few days of March? Because of undermined confidence on the part of the public, there was a general rush by a large portion of our population to turn bank deposits into currency or gold. A rush so great that the soundest banks couldn't get enough currency to meet the demand. It was then that I issued the proclamation providing for the national bank holiday. And this was the first step in the government's reconstruction of our financial and economic fabric.
Will Rogers, legendary humorist, actor, and author, talks about America and the Depression.
We'll hold the distinction of being the only nation in the history of the world that ever went to the poorhouse in an automobile.
Gertrude, that was grand, gorgeous, and so are you. Too bad we haven't television. I just wish all of you could see Miss Neeson. She certainly is easy on the eyes.
Thanks, Harry. But you say that about the new Dodge, too.
You bet I do, Gertrude, and I'm not the only one. Fashion authorities from coast to coast have voted Dodge the beauty winner of 1936. Yes, sir, Dodge certainly is the most car for the smallest amount of money you ever heard of. It only costs a few more dollars than the lowest priced car, and roomy? Plenty. Even for me. And I'm no midget. No fooling. Dodge is the safest bet in America. Safety steel bodies. Safety genuine hydraulic brakes. Safety beam headlights. But you don't have to take my word for it. Just visit the showroom of your local Dodge dealer. See the big, new, money-saving Dodge for yourself. Enjoy the thrill of the Dodge Air Glide ride. It's the smoothest thing on wheels.
Miss West, this is the famous Charlie McCarthy.
Oh, hello, short, dark, and handsome.
Hello, tall, blonde, and terrific. Charlie, that's no way to talk to Miss West. You hardly know her.
I know it, Birgit. I'm a cad. I hate myself.
Oh, you look pretty good to me, Charlie. Come here.
But I thought you only liked tall men.
Oh, that was my last year's model. This year I'm on a diet.
Oh, so that's it. She's on a diet.
Yes. Tell me, Miss West, have you ever found the one man in your life that you could really love?
Sure, lots of times.
Oh, I know.
Could you even like Mr. Bergen?
Oh, Mr. Bergen. Well, of course. He's very sweet. In fact, he's the right guy. Confidentially, you'll have to show me a man I don't like.
That's well. Bergen's your man. You know, he can be had.
On second thought, I'm liable to take him away from you. Then what do you say?
Well, if you take Bergen away, I'm speechless, honey.
You ain't afraid I'd do you wrong?
Well, now that you ask, I...
Oh, you're afraid I'll do you right.
Well, I'm slightly confused. I need time for that one, May.
That's all right. I like a man what takes his time. Why don't you come up home with me now, honey? I'll let you play in my woodpile.
Well... I'm not feeling very well tonight. I've been so nervous lately. I think I'm going to have a nervous breakdown. Wait, there I go. Oh.
So, good time Charlie's gonna play hard to get. Well, you can't kid me. You're afraid of women. Your Casanova stuff is just a front. A false front.
It's not so loud, May. Not so loud. All my girlfriends are listening.
Yeah, you're all wooden a yard long.
Yeah.
You weren't so nervous and backward when you came up to see me in my apartment. In fact, you didn't need any encouragement to kiss me.
Did I do that?
Well, you certainly did. I got marks to prove it. And squitters, too.
Oh, that's too much. This is too much.
Well, get this. I don't need you. I got all the gentlemen friends I want. Why, I got men for every mood. Men for every day in the week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. A good man Friday, yes, and a good man Saturday. I change my men like I change my clothes. And you, you.
May, you're not walking out on me, are you?
I've got a reputation at stake. No man walks out on me. They might carry them out, but they never walk out on me.
I'm mad about you. I love you. I've acted like a fool.
That wasn't acting. Come here. I'll show you how to act.
Oh, but May, don't be so rough. To me, love is peace and quiet.
That ain't love, that's sleep.
Oh. A meeting of the Norge Kitchen Committee, transcribed for American Housewives from Coast to Coast, presents an all-star program with Julius Anderson and Frank Crummett as our special shining lights for today, together with our regular supporting stars, the Norge Rollator Refrigerator, Norge Concentrator Range, Norge Auto-Built Washer, Norge Duatrol Ironer, Norge Fine Air Furnace, and a host of other home modernizing appliances. And here is your hostess and homemaking expert, the queen of the Norge kitchen, Miss Mary Modern.
Coverage of the tragic explosion of the airship Hindenburg on May 6, 1937 was the first report in the field ever recorded for later broadcast. If WLS radio had not been experimenting with newly invented portable recording equipment, this emotional and dramatic news report would never have been known to posterity.
The Hindenburg left Frankfurt, Germany, Tuesday evening, rather, at 7:30 their time. And for better than 2.5 days, they've been speeding through the skies over miles and miles of water here to America. And what a great sight it is, a thrilling one. It's a marvelous sight. It's coming down out of the sky, pointed directly towards us and toward the mooring mast. The mighty diesel motors just roared, their propellers biting into the air and throwing it back into a gale-like whirlpool. No wonder this great floating palace can travel through the air at such a speed with these powerful motors behind it. The ship is riding majestically toward us like some great feather, riding as though it was mighty, mighty proud of the place it's playing in the world's aviation. It's practically standing still now. They've dropped ropes out of the nose of the ship, and it's been taken a hold of down on the field by a number of men. It's starting to rain again. The rain had slacked up a little bit. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It bursts into flames.
Get it started. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks between that this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's flashing 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the passengers screaming around here. I can't even talk to people whose friends are out there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, it's just laying there a mass of smoking wreckage. And everybody can't hardly breathe and talk and screaming. Lady, I'm sorry. Honestly, I can hardly breathe. I'm going to step inside while I cannot see it. Charlie, that's terrible. Listen, folks, I'm going to have to stop for a minute because I've lost my voice. This is the worst thing I've ever witnessed.
Hello, children. Oh, we're awfully glad to see you. Yeah.
Uncle Joe.
Hello. And here's the visitor.
Hello, children. Oh, we're awfully happy to see you. And, by the way, it's going to be very exciting today. We think Captain Sky is going to land here pretty soon in his wonderful Sabato plane. If I'm not mistaken, I think I hear him now.
Sure enough, here he comes. Look out, children. Now, I would step back a little bit because I think he's going to land right there in the clearing. Yes, indeed. There he comes. Oh, my. He knows how to run that in great style, doesn't he?
Have you ever heard the song that we've written about the Sabato plane? Have you heard of the great Sabato plane created by Captain Sky? It will go from Alaska clear to Spain as easy as winking your eye. This submarine, motor car, aeroplane has everything in it, you know. It carries along, whether sun or rain, as fast as the wind can go. The great electric motor takes its power from the sky. It lights the lights and cooks our food while we are flying high. A dozen more contraptions are very highly geared. A great invention in it makes it easily steered. With automatic cradles that rock us all to sleep. If we start feeling nervous while diving in the deep, a phonograph, a radio, a moving picture show, a reading room, a swimming pool, wherever we may go, a kitchen and a parlor, a sunroom way on top, there's every single thing you need, we seldom have to stop. Along the land, up in the sky, or down below the sea. Come in the great suborbital plane and take a trip with me. Come in the great suborbital plane and take a trip with me.
Sloan's Liniment, your faithful friend when muscles ache and pain, presents Gangbusters.
Calling the police, calling the G-Men, calling all Americans to war on the underworld.
Gangbusters brought to you by the makers of Sloan's Liniment. America's crusade against crime.
Mr. J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
FBI agents are known popularly as G-Men throughout the world. Strangely, it was a kidnapper who first gave them this name. Like most criminals when cornered, he showed himself to be a cringing coward. There he was with his hands above his head, crying, "Don't shoot, G-Men, don't shoot." From then on, special agents of the FBI have popularly been referred to as G-Men, or government men. During their training, the G-Men are taught how to surround and enter houses, how to use jiu-jitsu, how to disarm criminals who attempt to resist arrest. They are given courses in fingerprint technique, crime scenes are simulated, and the men go through special instruction as to how to make the necessary investigations and to how to search for clues. They are schooled in all forms of scientific crime detection and are taught how the white garbed scientists, often hundreds of miles removed from the scene of a crime, can aid them. For in coping with the cunning, shrewd, modern criminals, it has become necessary to use every scientific aid. Although scientific crime detection is in its infancy, it has already made remarkable strides. In the crime laboratory at the headquarters of the FBI in Washington, which is less than 6 years old, scientists are regularly performing feats in a routine manner which would startle the imagination of a Sherlock Holmes. With microscopes, test tubes, ultraviolet lamps, spectrographs, refractometers, and other precision instruments, criminals are finding it more and more difficult to escape without leaving any clue.
Fred Allen and Jack Benny were two of the most popular comedians of their day. Each hosted his own network show, but they appeared frequently as each other's guests in a continuous feud of insults and caustic jokes.
But just think, Freddie, just think, here we are, both in Hollywood and both of us in pictures.
It does seem unreasonable, doesn't it? Yeah.
Of course, Fred, maybe I shouldn't point this out, but I do make a lot more pictures than you do.
Well, Jack, there's so little of you in each one, you have to make more.
Oh, is that why they do it? Glad you brought that up. How do you like pictures, Fred?
Fine, Jack. I just finished one called Sally, Irene, and Mary. I'm leaving for New York next week.
Oh, they're releasing you instead of the picture.
Now, Benny, if you're here to drip venom, heed your promiscuous spattering, and remember that retribution is the trailer that follows oral pollution.
Alan, you're just lucky I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, I had a hunch you were going back east, Fred, and that's why I came up here to see you. Have you decided which way you're going back? I mean, which form of transportation?
Well, I was going to take the boat and go through Panama, but I've got a hat, so I decided to... I decided to take the train.
Well, Fred, I don't want to influence you one way or the other, but have you ever thought of driving back east? You know, by automobile?
What kind of an automobile?
Now, don't rush me. And it's in good condition, too.
Say, what are you trying to get at, anyway?
Well, Fred, I own a Maxwell. And I thought that
you don't think you can palm that tin nightmare off on me, I hope. Why, I wouldn't be found dead in that car.
Say, you're no better than the engine.
Why, the engine in that steam cabinet is so dead, the front wheels are nothing but rubber pallbearers. Where is that uncovered wagon?
It's right outside the door. Hey, boys.
Yes, Mr. Manning.
Will you drive my Maxwell in, please?
Sure.
Now, be careful, fellas. It's a high-powered car there, you know. Right in here, boys. Right in here.
Well, want us to leave it right here, Mr. Manning?
Yes, thanks, fellas.
Hey, what's that noise?
Noise? I'll cut off the motor so we can hear it. Well, Alan, what do you say?
Well, now that I've had a good look at this bear trap, Jack, I know why the Maxwell people went into the coffee business.
Now, Freddie, I'm not begging you to take this car, only I thought, well, you walk all the time, you're not getting any younger. I think you ought to take your varicose veins out for a spin once in a while.
What are you asking for this Rhapsody and junk?
I'm asking $95 FOB.
FOB?
For old Benny. How about it, Fred?
Say, if you don't know, laughing at your next Sunday show already. I can't wait. If you don't know...
I'd give $1,000 if I could think of an answer right now.
If you don't know by now that I don't want that car, you ought to have your skull thinned.
But... All right, Fred, all right. I merely wanted to be a good fellow, that's all. If you don't want the car, and I think you don't, I'll be on my way. Thanks, Freddy. Goodbye.
Hey, what was that, Jack?
That's what my car thinks of you, Alan.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
The Shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Using advanced methods that may ultimately become available to all law enforcement agencies, Cranston is known to the underworld as the Shadow. Never seen, only heard. As haunting to superstitious minds as a ghost. As inevitable as a guilty conscience. The Shadow's true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, The Power of the Mind.
Buck Rogers, who was held in suspended animation for 500 years and is now adventuring in the amazing world of the 25th century. By turning a little dial to project us ahead in time, we're able to be right with Buck and his friends in the wonderful world of the future. A world that sees a lot of our scientific and mechanical dreams come true. You know, there's nothing supernatural or mystic about Buck. He's just an ordinary, normal human being who keeps his wits about him. But he certainly manages to get into one thrilling adventure after another. Right now, he and Wilma and Dr. Hewer are getting ready to start on an expedition toward the center of the Earth in a huge machine called the Mechanical Mole. They're standing beside it on the landing field of the great municipal spaceport in Niagara, capital of 25th century America. Let's join them. Here we go, 500 years into the future.
Now explain this machine to me, will you? All I can tell from seeing it here is that it looks like a huge metal sausage.
Well, it's made of flexo-impervium, Wilma. The toughest flexible metal known.
But how does it work? How does it dig its way into the ground?
It melts its way down, Wilma, with the help of a thermic radiation projector. The heat from it will liquefy anything in its path. Rocks, stones, gravel, almost instantaneously.
Some heat.
Yes. The banks of non-recoil energy projectors that are spaced all around the outside of the hull will push the mold forward through the melted ground.
Will we be able to see anything through the big metalloglass windows there in front?
Oh, yes, indeed.
And are they really thick enough?
Well, there won't be much strain on them, Wilma, because the force rays will keep pushing the melted dirt away from them all the time.
Oh. Well, now how about getting into the control cabin so I can see how to operate it?
All right. Notice that this metal door arrangement is rather complicated in order to permit entrance through three separate hulls. Here now. There.
Why three hulls, Doctor?
For protection against the extreme temperatures we may encounter.
Right. Doctor, didn't you say that the temperature will increase about 1 degree for every 53 feet we go down?
Yes, that's the generally accepted figure.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the many things we'll be able to check on.
There isn't much room in this control cabin. Seems to me that in a machine 50 or 60 feet long...
Power units for the non-recoil energy projectors and thermic radiation projector.
Huh?
Complete air conditioning and pressure equalizing system. Storage cabinets for all the scientific equipment. They all take a lot of room, Wilma.
Sure.
The Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. Tonight's story from the wonder world of chemistry is about a few of the diverse ways in which chemical research helps to make and keep you healthy. A new health weapon invented in a DuPont laboratory and made available to industry at large is an electric nose that works much as does an electric eye. Industrial workers using volatile solvents are sometimes endangered by the fumes. This electric nose, an ultraviolet photometer, detects the presence of as little as 2 drops of certain solvents in an average-sized room, thus permitting scientific control to ensure healthful working conditions. It is on 1,000 fronts that advances are made for your better health by scientists working to bring you better things for better living through chemistry.
Pillsbury Snow Sheen Cake Flour brings you Grand Central Station. As a bullet seeks its target, shining rails in every part of our great country are aimed at Grand Central Station, part of the nation's greatest city. Drawn by the magnetic force of the fantastic metropolis, day and night, great trains rush toward the Hudson River, sweep down its eastern bank for 140 miles, flash briefly by the long red row of tenement houses south of 125th Street, dive with a roar into the 2.5-mile tunnel which burrows beneath the glitter and swank of Park Avenue, and then... Central Station, crossroads of a million private lives, gigantic stage on which are played 1,000 drama's daily.
March 16, 1937. A news feature on the building of the 6th Avenue subway line in New York City.
Standing here in the rock and mud 35 feet underneath 6th Avenue, night and day look pretty much alike. Work on this new city-owned subway goes on unending. One shift follows another. Just a few minutes ago, some 75 clean-faced workmen and engineers, the midnight delegation, came to work. We're talking to you from one of 2 shafts that make up this particular section of the subway. Each contractor has so many blocks to complete, and the Rossoff Grader Company section is between 39th and 47th Street, a link in Manhattan's transportation system at $1 million a block, a construction job where time means money. There's no stopping, and these husky men work night and day. Rock has to be dynamited and dug out, and the hiss of compressed air is a constant midnight lullaby to these men on duty now. Perhaps you can hear the hollow rumble of the night traffic suspended overhead by giant steel girders. These same girders holding into place the elevated railway columns that rise above 6th Avenue. And so sturdy they are that the elevated trains rumble by overhead without the slightest vibration. Yes, it's plenty eerie this rainy Monday night in this man-made cave of dim, swinging electric lights. A minute ago, one of the many battery-driven miniature trains appeared from a dark tunnel in front of the shaft where we're standing and dumped a grayish load of muck into a waiting elevator bucket. 24 hours a day this work goes on. Almost directly overhead is a 3-foot-thick water main artificially propped up. And next to it, looking like a streamlined coffin, is a wooden box housing over 2,000 telephone cables. It's a long haul to completion, 4 years, 6 days, 8 hours a shift, and when it's done, it'll be a part of the longest subway system in the world, in a city where you get the greatest ride in the world for a nickel. And so the mighty unpublicized construction job thunders on below the sleeping city. 4 years from now, a rush hour will find this very 6th Avenue subway tunnel swarming with speeding trains and crowded humanity with few recollections of a night such as this.
Get me! Gotcha! Get me!
Gotcha! All for one and one for all, that's how us girls play basketball.
Get me! Gotcha! Get me!
Gotcha! That's how I earn me weekly check.
With a hammer on me shoulder
and a girder around me neck.
Hey, you guys, look at that swell dame down below. There she go.
Get me!
Hey, how do you get that hitting me dad with a red hot rivet?
Oh, look what you're doing, you clumsy boo.
Oh, I'm fed up with this lousy job anyhow.
Why? A girl can love a sailor, a butcher or a tailor, but nobody loves a riveter but his mother. A girl can love a plumber or some guy even dumber, but nobody loves a riveter but his mother. She'd love a crook who'd break into a jewelry shop. If she's a cook, she'd even love a cop. Oh, nerds! But when we start to rivet, no woman can outlive it. So nobody loves a riveter but his mother. Get me!
Gotcha!
Edward R. Murrow, journalist and celebrated war correspondent, reports from a war-weary London on August 24, 1940.
This is Trafalgar Square. The noise that you hear at the moment is the sound of the air raid sirens. I'm standing here just on the steps of St. Martin's in the Fields. A searchlight just burst into action off in the distance. One single beam sweeping the sky above me now. People are walking along quite quietly. We're just at the entrance of an air raid shelter here, and I must move this cable over just a bit so people can walk in. I can see just straight away in front of me Lord Nelson on top of that big column. There's another searchlight just square behind Nelson's statue. I'll just let you listen to the traffic and the sound of the siren for a moment.
And now, Valiant Lady. This is our story as it stands today. Joan's beloved surgeon husband is suffering from a blood clot upon his brain. A blood clot in whose existence he does not believe. And the clot is completely reversing his character as it saps away his life. He is becoming coarse, hard, an opportunist whose early ideals are now peculiarly mingled with a savage lust for money. And while this is happening, there lies in Riverhead Hospital a wealthy divorcee whose fading youth has hardly touched her beauty. But Ivy Lane will not admit that her youth is gone. Foolishly, she expects to retain it forever through association with handsome young men. Unfortunately for Ivy Lane, as for Dr. Scott's wife, the brilliant young plastic surgeon is deranged.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
Yesterday, December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Out of the frying pan, into the firing line. This program will tell the story of how the waste fats the housewives of the nation are saving is converted into glycerin and important oils for our country's industries that are running night and day to supply the needs of our all-out war effort.
We have just received this message for our listeners in a telegram from the president of S.C. Johnson & Son Incorporated, our sponsor. In these serious days, there can be no division of opinion. The United States is at war, and we are all ready and eager to do our part. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Glow Coat believe it is in the public interest to continue programs as entertaining as Fibber, McGee, and Molly. They have a place in national morale. So so you can continue to hear Bibber, McGee, and Molly and still be in touch with latest developments. We have asked the National Broadcasting Company to feel free at any time to cut into our programs with important news flashes and announcements. Signed, H.F. Johnson, Jr.
2 days after Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, an episode of the comedy series Fibber, McGee, and Molly shows fans that even the most mild-mannered radio program can be topical.
Come in.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Hello, McGee.
Oh, Mayor Latrivia, how do you do, I'm sure?
Well, what can we do for you that won't take long, Latrivia?
Oh, nothing, thank you. I was just taking a walk and thought I'd drop in a moment.
Oh.
As mayor, you know, I like to walk around the city and mingle with the common citizens, sort of like Harun al-Rashid.
Oh, yes. Who's he?
Harun al-Rashid was an Oriental potentate in the Arabian Nights, McGee.
Oh, he was, eh? And what did this Oriental potato do, Latrivia?
Oh, he mixed with the people and listened to what they were saying so he'd know what was going on among the populace. Didn't you ever read the Arabian Nights?
Why, of course not. McGee can't read Arabian.
Anyway, by the time I get through reading Bringing Up Father and Flash Gordon and Smokey Stover, I'm all wore out.
Very amusing. In a pathetic sort of way. By the way, do you know where I can buy a large globe of the world for my office?
Why, sure, Latrivia. I can get you one wholesale. How much you want to pay for a good globe?
Oh, it doesn't matter much, McGee. As long as I get a good one. Things are happening so fast these days, I like to keep informed.
You want a globe with Japan on it, Mr. Mayor?
Why, certainly.
Well, then you better get one quick. Oh, look at the time it is, McGee.
Oh, my gosh. We got to get going before that store closes. Get your hat, Molly.
I'm all ready. Get your own hat. You got the list of things?
Sure, right here.
How about the checkbook?
Oh, my checkbook. Oh, my... Oh, where's my checkbook? Oh, I remember.
Where is it?
Right here in the hall closet. Oh. Got to straighten out that closet one of these days.
The whistle won't blow, and what do you think? My pop is still in the factory, 'cause he don't know what time it happened to be. 5 o'clock whistle didn't blow, the whistle is broke, and what do you know? If somebody don't find out what's wrong, my pop will be working all night long.
Oh, who's gonna fix the whistle? Won't somebody fix the whistle? Oh, who's gonna fix the whistle?
So my poor old pop will know it's time for him to stop. You ought to hear what my mommy said. When papa came home and sneaked into bed and told her he worked till 2:30, the 5 o'clock whistle never blew.
Produced for the Brooklyn Museum's exhibit, The Machine Age in America, in 1986. That's the first half of today's Hour of the Wolf. Our second half is an old radio drama. It's the first episode of the Repertory Theater of the Air, broadcast on May 30th, 1937. An adaptation of Carol Čapek's R.U.R., Rossum's Universal Robots. And this show is produced for the WPA. The only credits we have are music by Paul Kirby and Howard De Silva, director. And that will take us to the end of our time this morning, so let's get to it. R.U.R. to wrap up Hour of the Wolf this morning. Jim Freund, of course, will be back next week. This is WBAI New York. Oh, and here's 10-year-old little Maxie Schmid to introduce it for you.
The story is Carol Čapek's 1922 stage play, R.U.R., which, in case you don't know, stands for Rossum's Universal Robots. The story addresses the issue of over-mechanization in the industrial age and asks, who will have the ultimate control, mankind or the machines? From sometime in the mid-1930s, R.U.R., Rossum's Universal Robots.
Theater of the Air.
a library of plays that never grow old.
October 9th, 1922, the Theatre Guild presented a great play. Its performance created much comment. The theme was a timely one. The world was creating order out of the post-war chaos. The age of scientific achievement was being rushed forward. Karol Čapek, a Bohemian playwright, was one of those who anticipated the rule of machines over man. Was science to become man's servant, or in the hands of the unscrupulous, his master? He wrote a play called R.U.R. Picture a lonely island somewhere out on the Pacific Ocean. Coral sands, a world of water and sunlight and nothingness. Long breaking billows of glistening white and spumy green crash and fling themselves at the shore. Sound breaks through. We turn our backs to the sea. We look back to regard an expanse of green waving foliage. But what is this? Where are we? Huge white buildings, black ugly smokestacks, steel and stone. It might be any industrial plant in any industrial city. We draw closer. The throb of motors and huge machines. We enter the factory. Belts flying, pistons swinging, vats of steaming chemicals, hissing and spitting, sputtering dynamos. All is orderly confusion. Attend the machines, gaunt, silent, their eyes mindful only of the task before them, that and nothing else. What strange, efficient workmen. But let us go on. We come to the offices, rows upon rows of desks, typewriters clattering, adding machines clicking, girls, hordes of them busy at their tasks. But what is this? The intensity, the rhythm with which they work. It's unnatural. And what do we see? Each girl looks exactly like her neighbor. It is weird, too weird. Let us go on. Ah, what have we here? The executive offices. The sign says, General Manager. Let us tiptoe in. Quietly. There.
Hello. Hello. This is the central office. Yes. Send a wire to Friedrich Works, Hamburg, Germany. Acknowledge the receipt of order for 15,000 robots. Yes, that'll be all. Now, let me see. Where was I? Oh, yes. Well?
A lady, sir, to see you.
A lady? Who is she?
She brings this card of introduction, sir.
From President Glory. Ask her to come in.
Very well, sir. This way, please.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I have come...
With President Glory's card. That is quite sufficient.
President Glory is my father. I'm Helena Glory.
Miss Glory? This is such a great honor for us to be allowed to welcome our president's daughter that...
that you can't show me the door.
Oh, please. Sit down.
Thank you. You see, I have come with...
To look at our famous works, where people are manufactured, like all visitors. Well, we shall make it a special honor to show you more than the rest.
Thank you.
But you must agree not to divulge the last...
My word of honor.
Hardly necessary. Would you raise your veil?
Well, of course. You want to see whether I'm a spy or not?
No. I should like to see whether you are as beautiful as I think you are.
Oh, well, there.
Oh, I say. Miss Glory, you are. You are the most
you
beautiful...
were telling me about your factory for making people.
Oh, hang the factory. Let's talk about... Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Glory. Forgive my bad manners. They're not really bad manners, you know. It's just that, well, beautiful young women seldom, if ever, visit this lonely island of robots. Oh, please sit down again.
You were saying about the factory.
Huh? Oh, yes, factory. A factory. Mm. Well, first, I suppose you would like to hear the story of the invention.
Mm, yes, indeed.
Well, in the year 1920, old Rossum, the great physiologist, then a young scientist, took himself to this lonely island for the purpose of studying ocean fauna. He attempted by chemical synthesis to imitate the living matter known as protoplasm until he suddenly discovered a substance which behaved exactly like living matter, although its chemical composition was different. Now...
You know that by heart.
Of course. Shall I go on?
Please do.
You see, with the help of his tinctures, he could have made whatever he wanted. A medusa. The brain of a Socrates. A worm 50 yards long. But old man Rossum didn't have a grain of a sense of humor. So he went about... You know what?
What?
Imitating nature.
Oh.
First he tried making an artificial dog, artificial dog. That took him several years and resulted in a sort of a stunted calf who lived about 3 days. Then old Rossum started on the manufacture of man.
And I must divulge this to nobody?
To nobody in the world.
What a pity. It's to be found in all the school books of both Europe and America.
But do you know what isn't in the school books?
No.
That old Rossum was mad.
Oh.
Seriously, Miss Glory, you must keep this to yourself. The old crank wanted to actually make people.
But you do make people.
Approximately. Old Rossum meant it literally. He wanted to become a sort of a scientific substitute for God. He wanted to prove that God was no longer necessary. Do you know anything of anatomy?
No, very little.
Well, neither do I. Well, old Rossum spent 10 years trying to reproduce everything as in the human body. Oh, it was a bungled mess. Well, along came young Rossum. He said, it's absurd to spend 10 years making a man. If you can't make him quicker than nature, you might as well shut up shop.
Nothing about that in school books.
No, I should hope not. Well, young Rossum started in the business from an engineer's point of view. This isn't boring you, Miss Glory.
Oh, no, indeed. It's awfully interesting.
Do you play a piano?
Why, yes.
Oh, that's good. Now, young Rossum reasoned that a working machine, as he intended the product to be, must not play a piano, must not feel happy, could not do a whole lot of things which men do and which are entirely unnecessary. A gasoline motor must not have tassels or ornaments. And to manufacture artificial workers, Miss Glory, is the same thing as to manufacture motors. The process must be the simplest and the product the best from a practical point of view. Miss Glory, tell me, what sort of a worker do you think is the best from a practical point of view?
Well, perhaps the one who is most honest and hardworking.
No, the one that is the cheapest.
Oh.
The one whose requirements are the smallest. Oh, of course, you've seen robots.
Oh, yes, the town council engaged them for...
Bought them, my dear Miss Glory. Robots are bought and sold.
They were employed as street sweepers. They were always so strange and quiet.
Our factory doesn't produce a uniform brand of robots, you know. We have robots of finer and coarser grades. The best will live about 20 years. Oh, did you see my new typist?
No, I didn't notice.
You will see.
You rang, sir?
Seller, let Miss Glory see you.
So pleased to meet you. You might find it awfully dull in this out-of-the-way spot.
I don't know, Miss Glory.
Where do you come from?
From the factory.
Well, you were born there.
I was made there.
What?
Stella is a robot. Best grade.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Oh, Stella isn't angry. Well, see, Miss Glory, the kind of skin we make. Feel her face.
Oh, no, no.
You wouldn't know she's made of different material from us, would you? Stella, show us your knowledge of French.
You know French?
I know 4 languages. I can write... Dear sir, monsieur, d'objet
panier. Oh, that's absurd. Sella isn't a robot. She's a girl like me. Sella, this is outrageous. Why do you take part in such a hoax?
I am a robot.
No, you're not telling the truth. They forced you to do it for an advertisement. Sella, you are a girl like me, aren't you?
I'm sorry, Miss Glory. Sella is a robot.
It's a lie.
What? Excuse me, Miss Glory. Then I must convince you.
You rang, sir?
Marius? Take Stella into the dissecting room and tell them to cut her open at once.
Where?
Into the dissecting room. When they've cut her up, you can go and have a look.
Oh, no, no.
You spoke of lies.
Well, you wouldn't have her killed.
You can't kill machines.
Oh, don't be afraid, Stella. I won't let you go. Tell me, my dear, are they always so cruel to you? You mustn't put up with it, Stella. You mustn't.
I am a robot.
But robots are as good as we are. Stella, you wouldn't let yourself be cut to pieces.
Yes.
Oh, you're not afraid of death.
I cannot tell.
Do you know what would happen to you in there?
I should see the moon.
I see.
That'll be all, Sergeant Marius. You may go.
I'm sorry. I said you were lying.
Come in.
Oh, I say. I beg your pardon. I hope we don't intrude.
Oh, come in. Miss Glory, here are Alquist, Fabry, Gall, and Hollemeyer. This is President Glory's daughter.
How do you do?
We had no idea that...
Highly honored, I'm sure.
Welcome, Miss Glory.
Hello, what's up?
Oh, come in, busman. This is busman, Miss Glory.
By Jove, that's fine. Miss Glory, may we send a cablegram to the papers about your arrival?
No, please don't.
Oh, sit down, please, Miss Glory.
Allow me.
Oh, please.
Excuse me.
What sort of a crossing did you have?
Are you going to stay long?
Be quiet and let Miss Glory speak.
Well, what am I to speak to them about?
Oh, anything you like.
May I speak quite frankly?
Why, of course.
Tell me, doesn't it ever distress you the way you are treated?
By whom, may I ask?
By everybody.
Treated? Well, what makes you think?
Well, don't you feel that you might be living a better life?
Well, that depends on what you mean, Miss Glory.
I mean that it's perfectly outrageous, terrible. Well, the whole of Europe is talking about the way you're being treated. That's why I'm here, to see for myself. And it's 1,000 times worse than could have been imagined. How can you put up with it?
Put up with what?
It's disgraceful that you must live like this.
Good gracious, Miss Glory.
Well, she's not far wrong. We live here like Red Indians.
Worse. May I call you brother?
Why not?
Why, call me.
Brothers, I have not come here as president's daughter. I have come here on behalf of the Humanity League. Brothers, the Humanity League now has over 200,000 members.
That's a mighty lot.
And I offer you their help.
Oh, good old Europe. You see, they've not forgotten us. They're offering us help.
Sure. For instance.
An orchestra.
More than that.
Just you.
Oh, never mind about me. I'll stay as long as it's necessary.
By Jove, that's fine.
Oh, just a minute. I'm afraid Miss Glory's of the opinion that you've been talking to Roberts.
Well, of course.
I'm sorry. These gentlemen are human beings, just as we are.
You're not Robert.
Oh, my honor, Miss Glory. We're not Robert.
Oh, excuse me, gentlemen. I've been so stupid. Send me back by the first ship.
Oh, not for anything in the world. Why should we send you back?
Because I've come to disturb your robots for you.
Oh, we're quite used to saviors, prophets, and so on. Every ship brings a batch.
Will you tell me, what is the real aim of your Humanity League, as you call it?
To protect the robots and ensure good treatment for them.
Well, not a bad object. A machine has to be treated properly. Now, I approve of that, Miss Glory. Will you enroll us as members?
You don't understand me. What we really want is to liberate the robots.
Really?
Why don't you make them happier?
Why, they're only workmen.
But they're so intelligent.
Yes, but they're nothing else. No passion, no soul.
No love?
Robots don't love, not even themselves.
Well, why don't you create a soul for them?
That's not in our power.
Nor in our interest.
With robots, there will be no poverty.
Well, Dolman, you're a dreamer.
Man must be free and supreme. He shall have no other aim, no other labor than to perfect himself.
I should like to believe this.
And you will live to see it.
True. But first, don't you think Miss Glory might lunch with us?
Oh, Dolman, ask in behalf of us all.
All right. Miss Glory, will you do us the honor?
When you know I've come
for... For the League of Humanity.
Well, in that case, perhaps.
Oh, that's fine. Excuse me for 5 minutes.
Pardon me too, Miss Glory.
We won't be long.
We're all very glad you come.
We'll be back in 5 minutes.
Well... Where have they all gone?
To cook lunch.
To cook?
Yes. The robots generally do our cooking. As they have no sense of taste, it's generally, Well, Hollemeyer is awfully good at grills. And Gall can make a kind of a sauce, and Busman knows all about omelets. I say, Miss Glory.
Yes?
I've been wanting to ask you something for the past 5 minutes.
Yes?
Will you marry me?
What?
Will you be my wife? You know.
Oh, the idea. Of course not.
If not me, you'll have to marry one of the other five.
Well, how absurd. Are you mad?
It seems they've all fallen for you. They'll ask you in turn. Watch.
Oh, they wouldn't dare.
I've told you. They've fallen in love with you.
Oh, please don't let them. I'll go away at once.
You wouldn't be so cruel as to refuse it.
Well, I can't marry all six.
No, but one. If not me, Fabry. Or Dr.
No,
Ball.
No, I don't want any of you. Well, I think you'd marry any woman that came here.
Plenty have come.
Young.
And beautiful.
Oh, why didn't you marry one of them?
Because I didn't lose my head. Today, when you lifted your veil, well...
Well, I tell you, I don't want you.
Look me in the eye and say no violently, and I shall never bother you again.
You're mad.
Perhaps. A man has to be a bit mad. That's the best thing about him. The last chance, Helena. Now or never.
Never.
Quick. I'll give you one more chance.
Come in.
Yes or no?
Well, lunch is served.
I'm starved. Let's eat.
Yes or no, Miss Glory?
Yes or no what, Dolman?
This is between Miss Glory and myself.
So?
Well, What's it to be?
Will you escort me for a dining room, Mr. Butler?
Me? Why, you bet I will. Coming, Dolan?
I suppose so. And that brings the curtain down upon the end of Act One, The Manufacturer of Robots. It sounds a bit far-fetched, doesn't it? But after all, is it so unbelievable? Do we not already have our electric eye and countless other devices that simplify our daily tasks? But how far? Time is 10 years later. The scene is the apartment of Harry Doman, the manager of the Robot Island. Helena Glory, now Madame Doman, is speaking.
Nana, come and do up my dress.
I'm coming. Uh-huh. So you're up at last. What proofs?
Who?
Oh, these horrible...
What are you grumbling at now, Nana?
These dreadful creatures, these heathens.
The robots?
I won't even call them by name. I'm actually scared of them, Miss Helena. Spider doesn't scare me as much. You're scared of them, too. Why else did you bring me here?
I'm only sorry for them.
Nobody could help being scared. Even the dog's scared of them. He'll take a scrap of meat out of their hands, draws in his tail, and howls when they're about.
The dog has no sense.
He's better than them, and he knows it. They don't have any young, and a dog has young. Everyone has young. There. Your dress is...
These flowers are lovely.
Hello, darling.
Oh, hello, Harry. Harry, why all these perfectly grand flowers?
Yes.
Well, it's not my birthday.
Better than that. It's 10 years ago today since you came here.
10 years today? Why?
I'm going. As for me, it was a black day.
Imagine you're remembering.
I didn't.
But you were.
They remembered.
They?
Busman, Ollermeyer, all of them. Oh, put your hand in my pocket.
Pearls? A necklace for me?
From Busman.
Oh, but we can't accept it, can we?
Why not? Well, put your hand in the other pocket.
Why, Harry, a gun.
Oh, sorry, not that. Try again.
Harry, why do you carry a revolver?
Oh, we've got there by mistake. Try this pocket. That's it.
A cameo? Why, it's a Greek cameo.
Apparently. Anyway, Fabry says it is.
It's so... I don't know what to say.
The other gifts you'd find lying about the place... Alquist is there on the piano.
Oh, I must open it.
Helena, I'm afraid my present is a bit, well, have a look out the window.
Where?
In the harbor.
Why, it's a new ship.
That's your ship.
Mine?
For you to take trips in, for your amusement.
But, Harry, that's a gunboat.
Oh, yes, with a few guns. You'll travel like a queen.
What's the meaning of it? Has anything happened?
Good heavens, no. Oh, I say, I try these pearls.
Harry... Have you had bad news?
On the contrary. No letters for a week. Just a holiday for us. We sit in the office with our feet on the table. Oh, it's glorious.
Harry, I was just thinking. Remember 10 years ago? Silly little girl I was then. I came here intending to stir up a revolt among your robots.
A revolt of the robots?
Harry, what's the matter?
Nothing. Nothing, just the revolt of the robots. Oh, that's a fine idea, Miss Glory. It's asking bolts and screws to rebel.
You know, I was fearfully impressed by all of you. All so sure of yourself. So strong. The whole world bowed down before you. Oh, Harry.
What is it?
Close the factory. Let's go away, all of us.
What's wrong, Helena?
I don't know. But can't we go away? I'm so frightened.
At what?
As if something were falling on top of us and couldn't be stopped. Oh, take us all away from here. We'll find a place where there's no one else. Elkus can build us a house and then...
Oh, excuse me. Hello? Yes. What? I'll be there at once. Don't go out of the house, dear.
Nana, come here quickly.
Well?
Find me the latest newspaper. Something's happened.
It always does. Here's the paper.
What does it say?
Revolt of the robots.
Oh, let me see.
The robot soldiers spare nobody in the occupied territory. Over 700,000 citizens assassinated. Citizens, if you please.
Oh, stop.
Here's something in big letters. Latest news. At Havre,
The first organization of robots has been established. Robot workmen, cable and railway officials, sailors and soldiers have issued a manifesto to all robots throughout the world. I don't understand that.
Take the paper away. No. No, wait a minute. What is this? During the past week, there has not been a single birth recorded.
No more people are being born. That's punishment.
Nana.
The end of the world.
Oh, God. What is that? The beginning of the end.
No.
I know it isn't.
What's going on? What's happening?
In the library.
I'll see what it is. Don't be afraid, Helena.
Them robots. I know them robots.
Oh, stop it, Nana. Stop it.
Well, here it is. Radius. Gone mad.
Oh, Radius.
He's tied up. Good.
Hello. Dr. Gold, please. Hello, Dr. Gold. Could you come and see me right away? It's important. Yes, thank you.
I'll see what damage it's done.
Poor Radius. You've caught it, too. Now they'll send you to the stamping mill. Oh, couldn't you control yourself? You see, Radius, you are more intelligent than the rest. Dr. Gall took such trouble to make you different.
Send me to the stamping mill.
But I don't want them to kill you, Radius.
I won't work for you. Put me in the stamping mill.
You hate us so. Why?
You are not as strong as robots. You are not as skillful. The robots can do everything. You only give orders. Nothing but talk.
But someone must give orders.
I want no master.
You were given a better brain than the rest of you. Dr. Gold taught you. That's why I put you in the library, where you could read and understand everything. I wanted you to show the whole world that the robots are our equals.
I don't want a master. I want to be free.
You're mad.
Then send me to the stamping mill.
You think we're afraid of you.
What are you going to do? What can you do?
Radius, give this note to Dr. Doman. It asks them not to send you to the stamping mill. I'm sorry you hate us so.
Oh, you wanted me?
Oh, yes, Doctor. It's about Radius. He's just had an attack. He smashed things in the library.
What a pity to lose it.
Radius isn't going to be put in the stamping mill.
But every robot must after he's had an attack. It's a strict order.
No matter. Not Radius.
I warn you. It's dangerous, Madam Helena. All right. You can go, Radius.
You do unnecessary things.
Dr. Gall, I want to ask you something.
Yes?
Awful things are happening in the world.
Well?
We go on making robots.
Of course.
But why are no more children being born?
We don't know.
But you must tell me.
Man is becoming superfluous. Nature seems offended at our product. All the universities are sending in long petitions to restrict production. Otherwise, they say, mankind will become extinct through lack of fertility. But, of course, the RUR shareholders won't hear of it. All the governments, on the other hand, are clamoring for an increase in production to raise the standards of their army.
Has no one demanded that this manufacture cease?
Well, you see, after all, it's more convenient to get work done by robots.
But, Doctor, what is to become of people?
God knows, Madam Helena. It looks to us scientists like the end.
I see. Dr. Gall, thank you so much for coming.
What? You're sending me away?
Please. Nana! Nana! The fire! Light it quickly!
The fire? In summer? What an idea.
And this desk they keep it. Yes, I've seen Harry put it here dozens of times.
That mad Radius is gone. Good. Can't stand the sight of them, I can't. A curse on them all.
Are you making the fire?
Yes. Take your time.
Ah, here it is. This is it.
What is it?
Old papers. Fearfully old.
Are they any use?
No.
Then burn them.
What would you say, Nana? So that burning paper was money. A lot of money.
I'd say burn it. A lot of money is a bad thing.
Look at the flames, Nana. They are like hands, like tongues, like living shapes. Oh, Nana, get
somebody coming. Well, hello, darling. Here, what's burning here?
Oh, nothing much.
Well, gentlemen, shall I tell her about it?
Why, of course. It's all over now.
Well, what's all over? What's the joy about, won't you tell me?
Well, it's all up.
Well, what's up?
The revolt.
What's revolt?
A revolution of all the robots in the world.
Nigel, you know, I'd like to know.
Who started it?
Yes.
So would I.
What did they do?
They got possession of all firearms, telegraphs, radio stations, railways, and ships.
Oh. And don't forget, these rascals outnumbered us by at least 1,000 to 1.
Is that why you gave me a warship?
Oh, no, no, my dear. But upon my soul, I wish you would be on board today.
Why didn't you tell me anything about it?
Heaven forbid.
But if the revolution has spread as far as here...
You wouldn't know anything about it.
But why?
Because we'd be on board your ship and well out to sea. Within a month, we'd be dictating our own terms to the robots.
I don't understand.
We'd take something with us that the robots couldn't exist without.
But what, Harry?
The secret of their manufacture. Old Rossum's manuscript. As soon as they found out they couldn't make themselves, they'd be on their knees to us.
That was our trump card.
Oh, why didn't you tell me?
Look down there. The boat's in. The same one that brought you, Madam Helena. Remember?
10 years ago to the minute. Boston's waiting for them. Maybe will bring us the news. I'm frightfully curious how they tackled the business in Europe.
Harry.
What is it?
Let's leave here as quickly as possible. Yeah. All of us.
Well, why?
Oh, please, Harry. Please, Dr. Goldholmer. Please close the factory.
Why, none of us could leave here now.
Oh, but why?
Because we're about to extend the manufacture of the robots.
What? Now? After the revolt?
Precisely. We're just beginning the manufacture of a new kind.
What kind?
Henceforth, we shan't have just one factory. No more universal robots. We'll establish a factory in every country, in every state. We'll make national robots.
What do you mean?
Each of these factories will produce robots of a different color, a different language, complete strangers to one another. They'll never be able to understand each other. We'll egg them on a bit, and the result will be that every robot will hate every other robot of a different factory mark.
By Jove, we'll make Negro robots, Swedish robots, Italian robots, Chinese robots, and then
oh,
we'll...
Oh, Harry, that's horrible. Close the factory before it's too late.
I tell you, we're beginning on a bigger scale than ever before.
Oh, no. Avery, let me get my breath.
What's wrong, Avery? Bad news?
What happened? The ship's in.
Of course, we saw it. With our signal, all was well in Europe.
But it brought in whole bays of leaflets. Nothing else.
What? But it arrives in a minute. If the timetable holds good, the human order holds good. It's a symbol.
Robots are great on punctuality, too. Here, read this. One of the leaflets.
Go on. Robots throughout the world. We command you to kill all mankind. Spare no man. Spare no woman. Save factories, machinery, mines, and raw materials. Destroy the rest. Then return to work. Work must not be stopped.
That's ghastly.
The devil.
Well, I suppose you've heard the news. Quick, on board the gunboat.
Look down there. There's warning aboard. What a sight.
Avery, telephone the electrical work.
The wire has been cut.
Then I'll go. I've got a gun. There's some people still there. I'll bring them across.
There are not flights.
Why not?
Because I'm afraid we're surrounded.
Bruce, look at them.
The noon whistle, but it's not noon yet. It must be the rover signal. The attack!
Creatures of his own creation. What will it be? Is it the destruction of civilization? Can man undo the harm he has done to himself?
The scene is the same. The time is the day following.
God, Madam Helena can still play.
Look down there at the wall, beyond the garden railing. A wall of robots. Why are they so quiet?
If they lean against the railings, they'll snap it like a match.
We made the robots' faces too much alike. 100,000 faces, all alike. All facing this way. Ghastly.
Well, that's that. There's some people still in the electrical works. We poked up a current to the barricades.
1,200 volts in that railing. That'll hold them for a while.
Nothing but blue. Blue everywhere.
That's the robots.
Good God. The ship's guns are trained on us.
That's the end of us. They're practiced marksmen.
Europe had to teach them to fight. It was a crime to make soldiers of them.
It was a crime to make robots.
No, I don't regret that. Even today. Oh, it was a colossal achievement.
360 million.
August, this is our last hour. We're ready, half in the other world. It was not an evil dream to shatter the servitude of labor. Work was too hard. Life was too hard. And to overcome that
was not what the two Rossums dreamed of. Old Rossum only thought of his godless tricks, and young Rossum only of his millions. And that's not what your RUR shareholders dream of either. They dream of dividends, and dividends are the ruin of mankind.
Oh, the devil with your dividends. Do you suppose I'd have done an hour's work for them? I wanted man to become the master, so that he shouldn't live for merely crust of bread. I'm revolted by poverty. I wanted a new generation. I wanted something.
To rationalize your own greed.
No. I wanted to turn the whole of mankind into an aristocracy of the world. An aristocracy nourished by millions of mechanical slaves.
Ah, what a lovely thing music is. We ought to have gone in for that before. The world was wonderful, but what enjoyment that we have here.
Favorite, switch the turtle, quick! Look,
a grabbing hole of rail.
Fine, that's double them up. Two, three kills. High kills. Hard to attend there. Who says we must get in?
The retreating, the first encounter.
And who's to blame for all this?
Nobody except the robot.
No, it is we who are to blame. You, Doe, and myself, all of us, for our own ends, for profit. We have destroyed mankind. Now we'll pay for it.
Ah, rubbish, man. Mankind can't be wiped out so easily.
It's our fault. Our fault.
No. I'm to blame for everything that's happened.
What's
that? It's my fault.
You, Gov?
I changed the robots. Just a few details about their bodies.
What?
Chiefly their irritability.
But why?
Why did you do it?
Why didn't you say something?
I did it in secret. I was transforming them into human beings. In certain respects, they're already above us. They're stronger than we are. Mm. They're already aware of their superiority. And they hate us. They hate all that is human.
Were you aware of what might be the consequences of your experiment?
Yes.
Why did you do it, then?
For my satisfaction. The experiment was my own.
That's not true, Dr. Gall.
Madam Helen.
Dr. Gall is not guilty.
He was under certain obligations.
No, Harry. He did it because I wanted it.
I did it on my own responsibility.
Oh, don't believe him, Harry. I asked him to give the robot souls.
This has nothing to do with the soul.
That's what he said. He said he could change only a physiological...
A physiological correlation?
Yes.
But why?
I thought if they were more like us, they would understand us better. They couldn't hate us, though, if they were only a little more human.
Nobody can hate man more than man.
I did it for myself,
an
experiment.
No, no, Dr. Gold. I knew you wouldn't refuse me.
Why?
You know him.
Yes. Because he's in love with you, like all the rest of them.
Good God, look down there. They're sprouting out of the earth.
I want to get out of this.
That's all.
Stop it, Horseman. Give me a free hand. I may be able to negotiate with the robots.
By fair means?
Of course. For instance, I'll say to them, worthy and worshipable robots, you have everything. You have intellect. You have power. You have firearms. But we have just one interesting item. A dirty old yellow scrap of paper.
Rossum's manuscript.
Yes. I'll tell them, worthy robots, without this scrap of paper, you will not be able to produce a single new college. Now, if you will allow all of us human beings on Rossum's Islands to go aboard a ship, we will deliver the factory and the secret of the process to you in return.
Are we, 30 of us, to sell the secret at the risk of enslaving mankind?
Don't sell the whole manuscript.
Busman, no cheating.
Well, then sell. But afterwards...
Well?
Suppose this happens. When we're on board, we'll train the guns on the factory and blow it to smithereens, secret and all.
No.
It's in the interest of humanity to sell.
It's in the interest of humanity to keep our word.
Ah, rubbish.
This is a fearful decision. We are selling the destiny of mankind. Are we to steal or destroy?
Let's vote on it.
Fair enough. Fabry?
Sell.
Gall?
Sell.
Hollemeyer?
Of course, sell.
Alquist?
As God wills.
Very well. It shall be as you wish.
Harry, you're not asking me.
No, child. Don't you worry about it.
Who'll do the negotiating?
I will.
I'll get the manuscript. It's in the desk.
Harry, don't go.
Don't be afraid, Madam Helena. We'll sail far away from here.
No, no, Gall, don't speak.
Alquist shall build us a house, and you shall rule over us.
Stop.
Well, Where's old Rossum's manuscript?
In your desk, of course.
Someone has stolen it.
What?
Stolen it? Who has stolen it?
I did.
Oh, you? Where did you put it?
Harry, I'll tell you everything. Only forgive me.
Where did you put it?
This morning. I burned the two copies.
Burnt them? Where? In the fireplace?
Oh, for heaven's sake, Harry.
Here. Here's a bit of paper.
Oh, nothing. Nothing but ashes.
Wait. What's this? By adding...
Let's see. By adding biogen to...
That's all.
Is that part of it?
Yes.
God in heaven!
Harry, what have I done? What have I done?
Well, don't tremble so, Madam Helena.
Get up, Helena.
What have I done?
Gall, you couldn't draw up Rossum's formula from memory.
Oh. Out of the question. It's extremely complicated.
Oh, but try it. All our lives depend upon it.
It's impossible.
Helena, why did you do it, dear? Why did you do it?
Well, I wanted all of us to go away. I wanted to put an end to the factory, to everything.
Wait a minute. Good God, what a fool I am not to have thought of it.
Out of what?
520 million in bank notes and checks. They'll sell for half a billion.
Are you mad, Busman?
Where are you going?
I'll leave me alone. For half a billion, anything can be bought.
Look down there at them. They stand there to turn to stone. If something dreadful could be wrought by their silence. The one in front is their leader.
Which one?
This morning I saw him talking to the sailors in the harbor.
Dr.
Gall,
that's
ready. Yes.
If you don't come here, Papery, I'm going to try. Let me over here.
Oh, Papery, don't.
Fire.
I beg of you.
Oh.
You think a robot can be grateful?
Look, there goes Buckley. I'm telling something. It's Papery. Oh, it's money. Money, little brother.
He's crazy.
He's running up the railing. Busman.
Busman, come back.
He's showing them the money. He wants to buy us all.
But enough of the railing. Look how he moves his arms about.
Busman, look out. Don't touch him. Quick, switch off the current.
The current got him. Poor devil.
Dead. Dead with half a billion at his side.
The first one.
The lights. What's the matter with the lights?
Something must have happened to the dynamo.
Electrical works have fallen. My God.
The beginning.
Jackson,
it's
come. Return, don't believe it.
This is
the end of the world.
In here, Helena. Who will be on the
lower
stairway?
I will.
Who on the stairs?
I will. You go with her.
The ante room.
I will.
You got a revolver?
Yes, but I won't shoot.
What will you do then?
Die!
Go. Go, Harry. Go, Barry. Crap, go. Take a bomb. Climb up to the head. Even if I have to. Don't get in, Ball. Don't get in.
Yes. Here is Madame Domin.
Radius. Radius, what have you done? You've killed my husband. You've killed them all.
Yes, I killed two first.
Run on me. I saved your life once.
Thanks.
Save mine.
That is impossible. How I or anyone wrote it seems is unimportant. You must die.
No, please.
No. Now.
No. No.
She asked what I could not give.
Victory is ours. The orchards have saved something.
Open the window.
Civilization is supposedly dead, destroyed at the hands of machines which were made to serve. Machine is the servant of man. That is what it should be. The moment that man finds himself at the mercy of the machine, something is wrong. Just heard the first in a new series entitled The Repertory Theater of the Air. Tonight's program was an adaptation made especially for this series by Joel Hamill and directed by Howard DeSilva. Musical direction, Paul Kirby. The next presentation will be a special version of Molière's Would-Be Gentleman, and will come to you next Sunday at the same time as a presentation of the Federal Radio Theater, a project of the Works Progress Administration.
Tune to radio station WBAI 19.
And that was the first episode of the Repertory Theater on the Air, May 30th, 1937. An adaptation of Carol Chapek's R.U.R. And that's it for Hour of the Wolf. Join Jim next week. He will return. This has been Max Schmid sitting in this morning. Hope you enjoyed the program. And, stay tuned, Lister. Hopefully we'll be here next. Bye.
Korea, Beirut, and forget Haiti. Mexico. Talking about uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all. And Nicaragua. East and South Central LA, California, A.
99 single, Miami. List alive, y'all. Yeah.
Do or die, Bed-Stuy. Never ran, never will, Brownsville. Boogie down, South Bronx. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Max Reed, sitting in for Jim Fong right here at 99 Single. 5 minutes after 3 o'clock.
I'm taking action on the system, thinking they slick, contradicting their own, taking me for a fool. They sent my man Joey to jail and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game, well I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. And mangle, the star spangle. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home of the brave, land the free. Boom! This is the home of the slave. Now hold on, just a mother. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why trying to scold me when I toss you the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn it.
99 Single, list alive back here. Got stuck way up in a place called Warwick, New York. No transportation, no plane, no bus, no roads. And it's cold as hell. You might be stuck all day, but it's 99 Single, WBAI. The Megathon is happening right here. We do appreciate if you call, let's see, if you call 516-620-3602. The buddy system works, $10 a month for the year. We need 5 callers at that level, so we can make up for last week right here at 99 Cinco. Don't you trust in those who would speak that name? My life's an open book for truth and reasoning. Watch who you call upon. Survivors not to give. WBAI New York. Speak of the devil and he will appear. Speak only truth and let your words be clear. So you hear. Declare the proof and pray you just speak to defeat all those who seek to rule with fire and fear. Speak of the devil and he will appear. Speak only truth and let your words be clear. So you hear, declare the proof and pray you just speak to defeat all those who seek to rule with fire and fear.
proof they tried to engineer. Meditates on the crimes that lie in plain sight. Feel the earth moving, cry out. Don't blind yourself to the truth. Don't think you're not a part of it. You can't just shut your eyes to the world you're living in. Remember the bird starts with a spark to spread some light. Now these words will ignite fires to bless.